Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HR Works podcast, brought to you by HR Daily Advisor. I'm your host, Josh Zygmunt, Content Director for Simplify Media. The HR Works podcast provides clear, relevant, and actionable information on topics that matter to you, the HR professional. When you're armed with the best practices and strategies to attract, retain, and engage top talent and deliver exceptional service to your organization, HR just works.
Welcome to the HR Works podcast. I'm Maddie Collins, subbing in today for our usual host, Josh Zygmunt. Today's guest is Shannon Gabriel, Vice President of Leadership Solutions at TBM Consulting, a North Carolina-based operational advisory firm. Shannon is an influential, dynamic, and well-regarded human capital executive with more than 20 years of experience helping organizations solve their most complex human capital challenges, including HR strategy, hiring strategy, and talent and performance management, along with supporting leadership development efforts and succession planning. She brings a proven track record of successfully driving proactive talent solutions, providing exceptional direction, and propelling organizational excellence, positioning organizations as an industry leader in highly competitive landscapes. Shannon joined the team at TBM Consulting in 2017, where she leads the organization's comprehensive approach to labor strategy, change management, and leadership development that impact top-line growth and improve organizational culture. In addition to her role with TBM Consulting, Shannon is a certified personalysis practitioner and just recently became a member of the Forbes Human Resources Council, where she shares her expertise and advice with other business leaders looking to transform their talent strategy to increase productivity and profitability. I'm excited to have Shannon join us today on the HR Works podcast to design a key component of talent strategy that is becoming increasingly challenging in the modern workforce, one that sees hundreds of applicants sent in for every job posting, while HR leaders still struggle to find that perfectly qualified candidate. Shannon believes HR team members can improve the interviewing and screening process by asking open-ended questions to disarm and engage candidates for a more fluid and insightful conversation, and largely letting the interviewee go rogue. Shannon, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to dive into this concept.
Thanks, Maddie. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. So just to start us off, can you explain what the rogue interview tactic is and what that kind of looks like?
The rogue interview process is, I would say, uniquely different than the standardization that we typically see whenever you're going through and interviewing a candidate. You know, the standard template is just that, it's a template. You know, there are a series of questions that people follow. A lot of times it's the same questionnaire, same template that's followed from one hiring leader to the next with the same individual. And they look for comparison purposes on how they answered it differently, what information they captured uniquely. The rogue portion of it is more conversational. It's a chance to allow the candidate to speak in depth and open-ended about various topics. It doesn't replicate the traditional interview in the sense that we're trying to capture these specific pieces of information and we're going through 50 questions. It actually goes through a different process where you want them to feel relaxed, disarmed, barriers are down, and you learn more about the individual, good and bad, based on the responses that they give. So when you let them go rogue, it's a long runway to see where those red flags are. And the red flags come up quite often. And so it reduces the risk that companies have and the candidate has in going to work for that organization.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the fact of the matter is that the interview portion of the hiring process is so important because you capture those aspects that you won't see in a resume or in like a LinkedIn screening or something like that. So what kinds of examples of open-ended questions do you have that highlight those green flags and red flags that can't be accessed through like general data?
It's not even about the questions that are asked as much as it is about the way that you set up the framework of the conversation. So when I go into these conversations, when they do these interviews, the first thing that I say is, you know what, I don't want to treat this like an interview, a traditional interview. Let's just have a conversation. I want to learn more about, you know, your history and what you've done and who you are. And as well, give you the opportunity to learn more about us as the organization. There are no bad questions. You can ask anything that you'd like. I want to make sure that you walk out of this as educated as I am on learning about you. And so you're setting the framework that they can be disarmed and they can have an open dialogue with you and talk about anything and ask any questions. Those questions that they ask can be telling. You know, you learn where the priorities are. So instead of asking, you know, tell me what your top three priorities are, you know, in this next career move, you're actually learning what those priorities are based on the questions that they ask that are sometimes taboo. Is the first question that they ask about compensation? Is it about time off? Is it about the leadership style and the culture? Is it about the growth plan? You know, and then you can have them break it down afterwards. Like if you, with all the questions that you've asked, how do you rank the top two? Like, you know, as you're evaluating organizations and coming to work for them, what are the most important for you? And so that's where it sets the tone, right? You're setting the tone at the very beginning, which is different than the standard interview process.
Yeah. And as much as this like approach is considered going rogue, it seems like it takes a lot of thought and like knowledge and planning going into it, because like you said, you need to know what your priorities are for the position you're trying to fill. So do you have any advice for HR professionals and hiring managers on how to understand this approach and how to, you know, read what the employee or the potential employee is putting down when they answer these kind of questions?
Yeah, the longer you let them talk, the better, honestly. And so, and not controlling the conversation, you can intertwine, you know, different talking points based on the areas of topics that they bring up and the way that they describe their background and the history that they have coming into it. You know, I look at it as like a drop-down dialogue, drop-down box, you know, as if they say, you know, certain elements, instead of just accepting it and marking it down on their response, ask them why, you know, tell me more about that. You know, you mentioned that, you know, if there was a career move, the question I would ask is, you know, everybody has a miss in their career. We've all made one bad career move, right? For one reason or another. What was yours? I can tell you what mine is. You know, I made this move for this reason. What was yours? And as you learn about that miss that they had, share how that resonates with your current organization and the department that they'd be in. And let them learn from that too. Let them be educated through that process. So I don't know if I answered your question on this, Maddie. Did I answer your question on this?
Yeah, I feel like you got to the crux of it, really, which is just like the key point in this is just being able to listen and truly, you know, hear and understand what the person is saying in the interview to get a sense of their personality, their goals, their values, and how they could potentially fit into your company's culture and how they may not.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to look at the negative, but there is a negative element to this that, you know, the reason why you want to let them not keep it nailed down to specifics, but actually speak to things in a general way and tell the story of their career history and who they are and what they've done. Once they feel like they can trust the process that they're in and they're talking to you as a friend or a peer and less as somebody that they're going to report to, that's when they really share the true story of how they became who they are today. And all those different nuances are going to let you determine if they're going to be able to fit into your environment and fit into that role. Can they handle the environment and culture that you have or the demand of those responsibilities based on what they've shared leading up to this stage and interviewing with you?
Yeah. And realistically, for the hiring departments, being able to narrow down the field beyond, you know, rudimentary like prerequisites kind of a thing is important. So it's not that you're necessarily looking for issues in this interview process, from what I'm understanding. You're just looking to see if it's the right puzzle piece for the hole in your puzzle.
It can really reduce the flight risk. So when you go through the standard interview process, everyone's on their best behavior. It's a first date, and they're all first dates the entire way through. So everyone's going to give, they're going to ask a textbook question and they're going to get a textbook answer. And at the end of that interview, you have a general idea on whether or not you think that they should advance to the second interview or the next individual on your team. But if all you got were textbook answers, then you still haven't uncovered the fact of the fit that they have. And it's not just about whether or not we feel they fit us. Do we fit them? Because that's still a flight risk there too. And I think the risk is oftentimes on the candidate side because they're on their best behavior and they just want to get an offer. You know, their goal through that process is to get an offer. So they're going to say and do, chances are, especially depending on the rank and the level within the organization of where they're interviewing, they may say whatever it is that they think you want to hear as an employer. And it's not until the very end that they start analyzing the offer. Do I know enough? Do I understand enough? Is the offer good enough? That they may ask a few last minute questions to determine if this is where they really want to go to work. But the risk is that if everybody comes into this, you know, goes up to the altar to get married and they've only been on a couple first dates, you really have no idea what's on the other side of that. And that's where you're reducing that risk in that process by changing the way that you're interviewing.
Yeah, and that makes sense because one of the most expensive things for a company to cover is rehiring someone for a position.
Absolutely.
Retention is the most cost-saving way to do things, especially going into the recruiting process with that in mind seems like a very smart strategic decision in the long run too.
Oh, it absolutely is. And you know, in the market that we have right now, regardless of the role inside the organization, I have a client that's had a COO role open for months. And so when you finally find that individual that you think is going to be a good fit, sometimes you're going through that interview process and you just want it as a hiring leader, you really just want to get to the yes. You know, so you may be even in a position where you're leading them along the way and giving them the answers to the questions that you're asking, which is putting both sides at fault because you're coming into this under false pretense. It's a unique situation. I think that, you know, a lot of companies are going to struggle with it because it doesn't follow the traditional model. And we've been doing it the same way for so long. There are thousands of books written on how to interview effectively. I would challenge how many of those are actually accurate. How many of those, you know, when you follow the traditional manner, how many of those actually, you know, lead to a successful outcome, or do they lead to the traditional attrition that we so often find and, you know, blame away as fault of the individual being under false pretenses in the way that they showcase themselves and their skills coming into it or what's important to them? Or did we do the same on our end as an employer?
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about like how rogue interview tactics can change the hiring space and hiring decisions and ultimately make it more beneficial in the long run. What other ways do you think that this approach to interviews can change companies for the better?
I think it's important for companies to reduce the screening upfront in the interview process and actually allow the individual to interview us as well. Most of the time, the furthest a candidate will get in that interview process to evaluate the organization is going to be on, you know, specific tactical things, you know, compensation, bonus, benefits, whether it be 401k, medical, healthcare coverage, you know, the reporting structure or the growth plan, but they really don't get a sense on the good, bad, and indifferent that makes up the organization itself. You know, when they say, their question that they ask at the end is often, you know, so Maddie, tell me a little bit about, you know, what you like working here. You've been here for 8 years. You know, what do you see the positives in working for this organization? We give a textbook answer because you don't want to be that leader that shares something negative about the organization. But really what you need to do is have an honest discussion on, you know, here are the things that I feel is a positive. Here are some of the things that we're working on right now. We've identified these areas. These are areas of improvement for us. And we're currently in the process of working through some mitigation on that. And be honest with them, because surprises going into it for a candidate, they can typically handle a lot of adversity. But when it's a surprise when they first start, that's when you go into risk mode, because then they start to make assumptions on what else could be going wrong that wasn't shared with me up front.
Yeah. And kind of in that vein, like you said, it's a two-way interview. Letting the candidate speak as much or as long as they want to kind of reveal how they could fit in, the green and red flags like we've talked about. Like you said, addressing pre-existing issues and how you're working to address them, what other ways do you recommend for interviewers to showcase the personality of their company in a way that is honest but still positive?
I think sharing the history of it would be a benefit. You know, every company goes through their own evolution. And oftentimes, you're seeing a change in the legacy employees. You know, you don't have as many, you don't have 30-year veterans inside the organization as often anymore. You're going to have maybe the longest tenure could be 5 years or 7 years or maybe 10. But I think showing and talking to the evolution of how the company has come to who it is today and where it was when it started is really important. It's not about the individual that started it, but how we evolved the culture. And where do we want to go? What's the future state? Here's what we're working towards. You know, what makes us up today. Here's what our DNA is as an organization, but here's where we're really trying to go. How does that rhyme with where you want to go? You know, have you worked in organizations that are similar to this mindset? Have you been in an organization that runs at this level of intensity and pace, you know, month after month for 12, 24, 36 months at a time? Or do you find that you're more equipped and you have better performance and results working autonomously and having more time to finish those projects? Those are the things that I would share and then give them a chance to speak to those instead of just nodding their head in silent agreement.
Yeah, I can honestly say from like firsthand experience that understanding how a company grows and how you can grow within that company makes a huge difference just from like the first job I had out of college to this current one right now. Knowing that I was going into a learning environment where like Josh encouraged me to try new things. Like I had no experience with podcasting before I started here. And just being able to, you know, grow and develop in a way that I hadn't anticipated, but still, you know, like furthers my own personal goals. It makes a huge difference. And to showcase that so clearly in the interview process, I think is a huge advantage.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes they don't know what they don't know. You know, they may sit down and I know I want to grow the skill set that I have and the experience that I have that I'm bringing to the table today, but I don't know where I want to take it. And I think there needs to be a freedom and forgiveness in them saying, I don't know, but... And us as employers saying, we're going to help you get there. You don't have to define who you're going to be in 10 years today. You don't have to sit in front of me and tell me that you want to aspire to be, you know, a director or a vice president. You sitting in front of me and telling me, here's what's going to make me feel good. Here's the gratification that I need to have month after month, year after year in order to stay. Those are the things that we really want to, I think, understand through the interview process so that we can both make an informed decision.
Definitely. So as much as we've talked about rogue interview tactics, let's pivot back to how a lot of interviews are conducted these days. So looking at the current interview process, what is one thing you would recommend hiring teams start doing immediately and stop doing immediately to yield better candidate results?
The first thing I'd stop doing is anything that's automated. I don't personally agree that that's the initial touch point that you want to have with someone is through automation. AI is a wonderful tool, but I don't think that it helps with the employee engagement, and it certainly can set the tone on what they can expect long term. And employee engagement is a huge issue right now for a lot of employers, a lot of organizations. So I think that's one that I would absolutely remove. I think that condensing the interview process is a requirement. The delayed, elongated interviewing somebody the first time and having, you know, a positive response to that and a determination that they could be the right fit for the role in the organization, that's enough to keep moving on to step 2, 3, 4, and do so with the right speed, because speed kills all new hires. They aren't going to sit and wait. They're going to sit and wait till they get the right offer from the right organization, but they're not going to sit and wait with that lack of certainty that an offer is coming. So they're going to move towards the one that has some level of credibility to end in the right fashion. So I think those are the areas that I would encourage companies to change right away. And you'd be surprised how many have so many steps in their interview process that it's to their own detriment. They lose so many folks along the way, really good, key, talented individuals along the way, that had they had a faster hiring process and they were quicker to move to a decision, they would have gotten better talent. And they would have got the talent, they would have received the talent that they want.
Yeah. To your point about automation, like one thing I've seen kills the hiring process is when companies require you to upload a resume and then they make you manually put in all the information for the resume again. So in that situation, that's a great spot for automation. But you're right, like the initial contact should come from a human being, because this is like the human resources department's responsibility. And like you said, that kind of speaks more towards the company culture and what the candidate can expect.
People make wild assumptions on how that initial process or that initial introduction is handled from the organization. So it's a swing and a miss sometimes.
Yeah, because like you said, every hiring process is 1,000 first dates. And if you get the ick from day one, you're not going to invest.
No, absolutely not. Not when you have other suitors coming to the door and you know, asking you out on the same first date.
Exactly.
It's too many options. Yeah, there's just too many options.
And you only want to tell them what your favorite color is so many times.
Absolutely right. That killer on the application process, I've heard horror stories where they've uploaded their resume and then they have to go through this questionnaire that can take an hour or longer.
Oh gosh.
Even if it's the company of their choosing, even if the opportunity seems like such a solid fit, if you're employed, you don't have time for that. And even if you're not employed and you're in between positions, they may not have the bandwidth to go through the mental space to conduct that. So they may make an assumption to just self-select out and move to the next opportunity.
And it goes to show how important, like you said earlier, speeding up that process is, like the efficiency of it will help you get those good candidates and prevent them from self-selecting out.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for listening to the HR Works podcast. Be sure to check out our new episodes every Tuesday. Follow us on all major streaming platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon Audible.